yes, I'm the great pretender. Adrift in a world of my own. I play the game, but to my real shame, you've left me to grieve all alone. Too real is this feeling of make-believe. Too real when I feel what my heart can conceal. Just laughing and gay like a clown. I seem to be what I'm not. You see, I'm wearing my heart like a crown, pretending that you're still around.
That's lead vocalist Tony Williams of The Platters with The Great Pretender, one of the group's biggest hits. That was recorded in 1956. Along with David Lynch, Paul Robey, Herb Reed, and Zola Taylor, The Platters, out of Los Angeles, were the first rock and roll group to have a top 10 album in the United States and had 40 singles on Billboard's Hot 100 charts between 1955 and 1967, including 4 number one hits. But of course, there's a purpose to the music, and it's about the pretenders, the Republican pretenders and the Democratic pretenders to the throne, as it were, the big prize being the White House. We're talking about the 2016 elections and the duopoly doo-wop. But are they singing your tune? Judging from news coverage, especially in recent weeks, the 2016 presidential election is in full swing, cast as usual as a two-party square off. A crowded slate of 16 Republicans so far. We don't know if any more would show up. And a more modest slate of 5 Democrats so far, if Joe Biden declares, that would make it 6. But they've been scouring the country looking for money and votes. And in exchange, they bring you a message, or several messages, talking points, as it were, where they stand on issues that are relevant to the targeted constituencies from which they expect money and votes. So the question today is, are they talking to you so far? Of course, I mean, the race has quite a way to go, but as we can see, it's developing to be a heated contest. And all kinds of messages are being flung all over the place. People are, you know, just basically hoisting different ideological and political flags to see who salutes it. And the question today in our forum is, are they talking to you? If so, about what? That's the question. The number to call is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. I'm expecting you to be very analytical today as these contests shape up. What it is you're noticing, what it is that's bothering you about what it is you're noticing, and really what you think might be an alternative to what it is we're noticing. Of course, this is part of what would widely be viewed, in fact, President Obama in Africa, visiting Ethiopia, is of course talking to the African Union there, and again, in lecturing mode, talking about democracy. Well, this is an expression of American democracy. And essentially, we are concerned as a nation about the Democrats and the Republicans, nobody else, because nobody else has anything important to say. And we see this largely as a contest of the involving the duopoly, the historic duopoly of our country. What messages are we getting from these people? What are they saying? And this is not to say that they have nothing to say, but in the context of what we have been discussing on this program and on this station, what are they saying with regard to the issues that we regularly cover and discuss? What are they saying to these constituencies that we've been talking about that offer a glimpse into the other Americas, you know, the other people? They're a huge constituency. Do we believe these folks at what they say? Are they saying things simply to get people's attention and that's enough? Are you concerned at all about the state of our political affairs? What is it that you're gleaning from the current climate? And this is going to be an ongoing thing, as we had done, as we did the last election season. From time to time, we pause and we take the temperature of the political atmosphere. We try to figure out where things are. But there certainly have been some very dramatic developments, I would say, so far. The Republicans are and the Democrats, more so the Republicans, I think. I mean, can it get any worse? What is this thing that we're witnessing here? People are talking, I mean, at a level that, I mean, it's embarrassing almost. I imagine that on the world scene, people are wondering, is this what goes on in the United States? Is this what is passing for democracy? This is how they do it? This is what it is? Well, I don't know. We should engage in this discussion. What are you noticing about the tenor of our times? What are you noticing about this 2016 presidential contest as it gets underway? And what does it mean to you? And beyond that, what options do you think you have so far? What are your inclination so far with respect to this whole process, this election process? What is your mind saying to you? What are you likely to do based on where we are so far in this race? Okay, that's the task for our program today. And I'm looking for very, usually, of course, very insightful analyses from you to let us know what it is that's on your mind. This is a kind of a people's poll, if you will. Polls are constantly being taken to measure the temperature out there, how people are reacting to what it is they're getting or what is being given to them. But we should be a little bit more independent of the headlines. We should be a little bit more analytical. And we should be mindful of the history that we've been talking about here on this program all the time. What is going on in this country? What does this process mean to you? What do these candidates offer you, if anything? And what do you see as your political options at this point? What are you likely to do come 2016? All right, that's the task. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. 888-874-4888. While we wait for your calls, I just want to mention again that your many wishes and good thoughts coming my way have been very, very vital to my going every day. I really am so grateful that you have been so generous with your thoughts and prayers and good wishes. So thank you so much for that. I still do want to encourage you to help this station grow. And you can do that by passing the word within your spheres of influence about PRN. And I want to be a little bit, self-centered here about Lead Stories. This is a great program because it is the connecting point between you and everybody else. So I'd like you to enlarge the listenership, both of Lead Stories and PRN, by telling those folks that you know,
share this with you,
that you are a daily listener. This is your point of reference, and you cannot live without it. So let's see if we can grow that audience and pass the word along. All right, do we have any calls just yet? Apparently not. Well, this is unusual. All righty, I'll just take... Oh, yes, we have some calls coming in now. Thank you. We'll be talking with you shortly. All right, so here we are. We just talked a couple of days ago, starting last week, we talked about what's going on with Donald Trump and the impact he's had on this election. We talked about the presumptive nominee, I said presumptive with quote marks around it, Hillary Clinton. And we're talking about what it is that this particular election in 2016, the significance of this election at this time, and comparing where the candidates say they stand as opposed to where the people stand. Now, we know that there is usually a yawning gap between the two. But in this desperate fight, and it seems to be more desperate than I remember it in recent years, there's a sense of urgency about it that I haven't seen in quite a few years, quite a few elections. The cutthroat attitude, the low level to which most of these folks have sunk, the pandering, just the bad vibes that they're giving off, they're very off-putting. And these are the things that are dominating the discussion and debate at this point. I don't understand it. I really don't. What is accounting for this? Could it be that the prize is so cherished, the White House, people really want it in a way that they haven't wanted it before? And we have people in the race who are desperate to make their mark before they, exit. Quite a few people up in years, and they believe that they have, toiled hard in the vineyards, and this is their just reward, and they ought to be president of the United States. We have the element of money, people with a lot of money, not all of them, but most of them have a lot of money, and they believe that, hey, I have money, I am smart. I am smart, I can rule. I can rule because I should, and therefore that's what I want. And they're willing to go to any lengths to get the big prize. That's that. We have the other social issue going on in the United States across the country where these disparate groupings and constituencies are dealing with their major issues. Some of them are compartmentalized, some are quite generally felt and shared, but there is a sense of something. I don't quite know how to define it. It's turmoil, but over a bunch of things, and affecting people in different ways. So this is a very, very different kind of race, I think, this coming presidential election in 2016. But I'm looking at the candidates, how they're behaving, what they're saying, what they're doing, how they're doing it, and what it is communicating, not just to voters in the United States. What is it communicating to the rest of the world about where the nation is right now? Are these things troubling you? I mean, is it something that causes you to think about where we are and where you are and the way your political world is shaped, as opposed to where they say the political world is? Is there a distance? Is there a huge distance between where you are and where they are? Are they in any way reaching you? Are they in any way talking to you about the things that matter to you on a day-to-day basis? Are you part of this drama? Do you see yourself as becoming more and more involved or less and less involved? I'm looking for answers from you, and I'm hoping that you can get us started with this conversation. What are we witnessing about this thing called the 2016 presidential race, based on the headlines, based on what we know from, quote, news coverage, unquote? All right. Well, let's take this call. Let's take this break, and we'll come to your calls at 888-874-4888 right after this very brief break from the platters.
Yes, I'm the great pretender, just laughing and gay like a clown. I sing.
You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Utrice Lead, and we're talking about the duopoly duop today. Are they singing your tune? As the 2016 presidential race heats up, and it has, we have 16 Republican candidates. We have 5 declared Democrats so far. But as they come to you to talk about the things that they say matter to you, are you in agreement with that? Do you believe that how they are defining the reality of the United States and your reality that jives with the way you define your reality and the issues that are important to you? Is there something particularly noteworthy about this race that you think you'd like to share? Is there something that we're missing? Is there something particularly different about it? 888-874-4888. You have me a little surprised, I must tell you. I expected that you would be waiting to talk about this. And I'm a bit surprised to know why you're so shy today. Well, let's hear from Kwame. Hello, Kwame. You're on the air.
Hi. How you doing, Patrice?
Fine, thank you. What is your Great. Thinking you want- about the race so far?
Well, I think on one end, the Democratic, not the Democratic, the Republicans, I think this. It's so far out there, but they do have a consistency that, you know, that agrees with that their far out policies. When you see Donald Trump with his, basically circus going on, and, you know, I don't know how true it is, they're saying that he's actually so far in the lead. I mean, it's not surprising because people actually, you know, they actually believe everything he says. They actually think that he's champion their cause. Not to know that once if he was to get in office, everything, he would cut everything for them. You know, as far as health benefits and all, you know, all those things. But I mean, you know, racism blinds people.
But what does it mean to you? Are they talking to you at all on any level?
No. Not at all.
What are you expecting? What is important to you that you want to hear about, even at this early stage of the campaign?
I want to hear about, wage wage differential. I mean, well, wages being brought back to a standard that people can survive off of. I want to hear about some type of a real job development program in America. Not jobs leaving here, but jobs staying. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, the issue of housing, affordable housing, where people can live, you know, basically people can live a decent life. And I don't see none of them talking to none of that, you know, to those issues. And nobody talks about the issue before. You know, that's a curse word.
Wow.
They even mentioned the poor.
So Kwame, based on the way things are shaping up, what are you likely to do so far, based on what you've witnessed so far, what are you likely to do as the general election next year comes along?
Oh, I'm not voting.
You're not voting?
No.
Why? Can I ask you why? I don't mean to demand an answer, but can I ask you why?
One reason, I really don't, especially in national elections, I really don't believe in them. I believe they're fraudulent. They're so fraudulent. It's just big money. And they're not a bunch of liars. You know, corporate control. I don't see no sense of voting for them. I just don't see it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your call, and thank you for getting the conversation started today, Kwame.
Thank you, my sister. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. From Florida, we have Ray.
Yes, Utrice. Kind of a noisy connection, but can you hear me all right?
It's very well.
Okay, good. I'd like to talk about something election-related that I think happened while you were unfortunately in the hospital. The Green Party announced that they are holding their convention this summer in St. Louis, and that is specifically so they can address and highlight police violence and racism. And for those who still believe that voting serves a purpose, I think that's something that, you know, the wider public needs to know, because it's not, it hasn't really worked its way out into the dialogue or the trialogue, as it were, yet.
Do you think the Green Party is doing enough to really get into communities with its message?
Well, I'm glad you asked me that, because I've been listening to your show for a long time, and respectfully, I never agreed with your characterization of the Green Party. I've read their plank, and the social justice issues and the issues of scaling militarism and empire way back are some of the most important things that that we need to address. And I do not feel that they are one party platform in any way. And I think you once said that they didn't reach out to communities of color, and my counter to that is that I think in the last race they were so poorly funded that they really only made two public events, and one was when they tried to get into the presidential debate, and Jill Stein and Sherry Hankala got chained to metal chairs for 9 hours. And the other point when they made a public appearance was Jill Stein brought food to people who were blocking the Keystone Pipeline, and she got arrested for that. But most of their work was just done over the Internet. And when you couple that to the fact that the Green Party made a disastrous decision by giving the nomination first to, what's her name, Roseanne Barr, and then suddenly that disappeared, and then it was Jill Stein and Sherry Hankala, I think they kind of shot themselves in the foot with the Roseanne Barr thing, and that, you know, hopefully they've recovered.
Why is it, and I respect that you disagree with me on the Green Party, but it is, to me, I have a hard time rationalizing the existence, the formal existence of the party for this long. It's been around for quite some time. But it seems to me they act like they don't want to win anything. They act like they just want to be there. They act like they're not hungry for a win. And I don't see the point of a party just having a kind of blasé attitude, almost a kind of disdain, if you will, for winning. I mean, you want to win, then you act like you want to win. You organize and you really go at it to achieve a particular goal. But there is an anesthetic effect, I have argued, about constantly losing. When you set out and you are involved in race after race after race, and it's loss after loss after loss, that in itself becomes an anesthetic. People turn off. But if you act like you want to achieve something, if you act like you have a plan to win something, and you can show that you have won whatever it is that you set out to win, that is incentive for people to support. But this is a major problem, I think, with many left-of-center movements. They act like it's enough simply to be out there talking rather than to be out there winning.
Yeah, well, we could do an hour on just that. Do you happen to know the disposition of David Lane's run in Brooklyn, since I'm another former New Yorker like you? Greens were running him for Congress, and I don't know how that shook out.
No, I don't. I don't know either.
I think his first name was David. I know his last name was Lane. So much of that has to do with the media's ridicule of the third party thing. Then, I think that has to be addressed first, because the system is, when the system sidelines you, it doesn't matter how vociferous you are if you never get any airplay. Wouldn't you agree?
No. Because you also have to keep in mind that, I mean, part of the strategy of winning is you take nothing for granted. You can't take media coverage for granted. You're just there to get the job done, and you have enough information at this point to understand that there will be obstacles against you, and you know what those are. So if 20 years have gone by and you just can't get over a particular hump, it must mean that you're not paying attention even to your own history of performance as a political entity. You've got to retool in order to win. It's as simple as that. I think the Green Party has some work to do. I have not seen it in the many years that I've been around in African-American and Latino communities. I've never seen the Green Party as a pronounced or even visible, constantly visible presence in the issues that matter to these folks at that level, you know, the grassroots level, community level. I don't see that. I see the Green Party contending on the basis of, well, we just like the Democrats. We have that status and that stature. And I wish it's like many unions, many of the labor unions have gone that route as well. They no longer are attached to grassroots activities.
Sherry Hunkela. You know,
so I think that's a major issue. I want to ask, though, Ray, what of what you have observed so far of this presidential race as it unfolds, what bothers you most about it?
Trump and second place would go to Huckabee. Trump, because he is really a walking barometric reading of hatred and ignorance. And Huckabee, because he's got those big brown eyes and that kind of cheesy smile, and he tries to appear kind, but if you really look at what he says, he is incredibly vicious and divisive. And, well, I have no respect for really anyone of any cloth of the Abrahamic, you know, traditions. But I just find it particularly deceptive that that he tries to appear like everybody's friendly grandpa. And when you dig into some of his quotes, it's he has some really dictatorial notions that I find very troubling.
So I'll ask you, as I asked Kwame, what are you inclined to do as a voter presuming that you're voting. Are you voting?
Well, a little background. I voted for Obama in the first election, and the night he was elected, I wept because every good person, you know, I'm almost your age, and
well, you're 22. So
pardon me?
You're 22.
Yes, soon to be 39. And I was at JFK's funeral with my parents when I was 8 years old, standing on the sidewalk. And, you know, it's all the political assassinations of the 60s and all of that is very, it's all very visceral to me. And I told myself in 2008 that if Obama turned out to be just another con artist, that was it for me, that I was not going to invest. I wish there was another word besides hope, because that has been so sullied. But I'm not going to make the emotional investment anymore. And that's kind of where I stand right now.
Wow.
We really don't have a representative government. So.
Not even with the Green Party?
Well, I sent Jill Stein money the last time around, and I might make a small donation again. But I, like I said, it's for people who still believe in it, and I applaud what they're trying to do, but no. Do I ever think that there's going to be enough momentum? Yeah, no. If that doesn't seem too strange a dichotomy. No, I don't.
So we're 2 for 2 here so far. All right. Thanks so much, Ray, for calling.
Sure thing. Take care.
888-874-4888. That's quite revealing. Two people who have entirely different views, but the same outlook, believe it or not, with respect to the attitudes about this process called the election or democratic process. They both agree it's useless to even be part of it. They're not going for it. They're not into it at all. That's really incredible. And that means that there is a drift away, whether people want to acknowledge it or not, in political circles. They concentrate on the people they think they have, but it's probably too much work to reach a Kwame or to reach a Ray and to give them a really persuasive argument for involvement and continued involvement in the political process. It probably is so much work that they say, nah, we're just going to set you aside if you want to opt out, and we'll deal with the people that we're all scrambling to win. 888-874-4888. This is a very important discussion from the point of view that it forces, I think, or encourages us to look at our own political evolution. How have we, and we heard it from Kwame, we heard from Ray, that over a period of time, in both cases they cited this, they have taken note of how the system has performed or not performed consistently. They've given the system the benefit of time, they've given the system the benefit of doubt. So they're not, these are not knee-jerk reactions that they expressed to us today. And they've decided the system is beyond reformation, the system is beyond retrievability, so they are opting out. They cannot be part of it. Are you there as well? Or do you have a different view? Let's hear what your view is. 888-874-4888. I'm a bit surprised, I must tell you, that I expected that we would have vigorous interchange today. For some reason, you're kind of shy today, which is unusual for Lead Stories. Lead Stories listeners are bold and very outspoken. But I think you're hedging your bets. I'm interested in why. Why are you being so cautious today? Has the subject in some way intimidated you? You don't want to come out and say what you're thinking all of a sudden? I don't know about this. I don't know this Lead Stories listener. The listener I know is someone who can't wait to share the ideas that they have, because this is how we learn. We learn from each other. We learn from each other because we're sharing information based on our actual experiences. And this is vital to our education as a community of people who operate in different spheres of influence. And we share our thoughts, and we share our expertise, we share our experiences, and this is the way we educate each other. So I'm concerned about the lack of connection that we have between what we know to be a truth, and just to say we fall for the election talk that we get over the airwaves. And this is what you ought to be. This is what you ought to be thinking. This is what you ought to be doing. This is what ought to occupy your mind. These are the issues you ought to be thinking about. And they have nothing or very little to do with what you know to be your truth. Let's talk to Pat from New York. Let's hear what she has to say.
Hello, how are you doing, Ms. Eutrice Lee?
Hello, how are you doing, Pat? What are you thinking today?
I'm thinking of jumping ship, literally jumping ship, because this ship is sinking. It's sinking. Having been a Democratic voter, you know, my adult life, I realize it's not working for me anymore. I realized it a while ago, actually. And therefore, I would go and, you know, go to the poll. I sign in, and I would, writing the candidate of my choice, whether it's the mayoral race, the city council, president. And for the last couple of years, I've been actually voting for you, and I've been voting for Alton Maddox. I write your name in. It doesn't matter what position it is. No, seriously. And it doesn't matter what position it is. I would always write it Alton Maddox Day and Eutrice Lee. Two people I've been voting for the last couple of elections. I took it on to change my party affiliate. I've been a registered voter since I was the age of 18, and I decided to put in a new voter's registration form, no party affiliate. So I was just thinking if I encourage some of my, you know, associates and family members, let's all just change our party affiliate. Therefore, the bean counters won't be able to at least line us up and say, well, you know, we got X amount of registered Democrat, you know, X amount of working party family. If people just kind of jump ship, you know, you registered to vote, you know, so if you really, there was a candidate that you really like, you can vote for them, but you don't have a party. You know, that's where I'm going right now. No party. No party affiliate.
Pat, I have to ask you this. What happened in over the years that brought you to this realization that you have to jump ship, as you put it?
What happened in the last couple of years? An illusion. I've been deluded of the political party. Growing up, I was part of the local Democratic Party in my community. You know, I come out of the same Shirley Chisholm house. You know, I come out of those parties. You know, I grew up, the civic duty, you know, the whole thing. But I realized that these politicians are so far away from the average person. You don't see them anymore. You don't even see them walk the street. They have no association with the little person in the community. It's at that particular point you say, you know, enough is enough. You know, you can't get a simple thing from your politician anymore. Before you could. Not anymore. Not anymore. Not even on a local level. Nothing. Nothing.
So as this presidential race shapes up, what are you likely to do?
Oh, well, like I said, what I'm going to do is I started this. I started having people re-register. First thing first. Majority of us here in New York, you know, they can vote. They can see that you're already, you know, this is a Democratic state, as you know. But the thing here is, rather than have Sister Hillary, and I say that in the most sarcastic way, because she's being forced down our throat as our sister, let's give them something to think about. We are not going to be, how would you say, you're not. We're not going to be as. What's the word? You can't depend on us because we can't depend on you.
Predictable. A predictable voter.
Yeah, that's a predictability. It's, you know, that's what they do. They predict that, oh, this is how many people we got. We already got those numbers. That's what they do. The bean counters. They vote you before you get there. So, you know, let's jump ship and let us have a mass movement off the dualopathy, right? The Republicans, the Democrats, same bird, two different wings, same thing. No, let's not be predictable.
All right. Well, thank you, Pat, for your call today. And I had no idea that I was being voted for.
Oh, definitely. 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 Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for your call today. From Brooklyn, Ethan, you're on the air.
Greetings, Sister Utrice.
Thank you so much. Same to you. What have you to contribute today?
Well, I don't even know where to begin. Let's see. The politicians are not talking to me. They're not talking. I don't think that they're talking to a very select group of people. The Trump issue being the noise of the day. What shocked me about that is, what doesn't shock me, but what I'm observing, and it doesn't seem to be brought up, is whatever he says that makes him popular shows you the temperament of the people in the country as to why he's popular. And they're just totally ignoring the fact that's what the case is. You know, if he's popular after he says some offensive stuff, well, then that means he's speaking the language of that group of people that say, yeah, he's the number one guy in the race for us. So you just got your temperature right there of where the people in at least that part of the camp is. And then you have how the news delivers this whole portrayal of this Democratic race, the race for president. They sit there and act like they're sportscasters. You know, when you sportscasters will tell you, the commentators will tell you, well, what does this team need to do to win the Super Bowl? What does that team need to do?
Like
these guys sit there and say, well, what does Hillary have to do to make this, or what does this one have to do to turn this table? I'm like, what is that? That's not what we're not here to figure out how they should be, or they shouldn't be sitting here telling us, describing what their strategy should be, to how they make themselves seem more whatever to whomever. That doesn't make any sense. That's just mass craziness. And in my years here, I figured too that I've watched both parties rule, and this country's just going down the tubes on behalf of both parties, which tells me that neither party, that, like we said, it's you got a left wing and a right wing of one bird, and it's flying away with all the money. And that's where we're at. So where I see it is, I too have divested myself of the moniker of being a member of the Democratic Party. And I'm really interested in the people of this country having the discussion about the issues that we should be talking. We should not be talking party. We should be talking policies and analyzing, you know, what's good for people. And so, unfortunately, too many people are still buying into whether it's a Republican talking or a Democrat talking.
If the candidates were speaking to you, what would they be speaking about?
Wow. They would be speaking about putting real infrastructure jobs in place. They would be speaking about getting a real proper healthcare system in place. You know, if they were so smart, and if they really were about what they claim they were about, you would be analyzing the best of all worlds, right? It's not like we don't know what's going on around the planet, and you can pick and choose what works in one system, what works in another, and create a hybrid that says, hey, this is the best of all ideas. And this should satisfy, you know, the majority of our situation. But that's just a perfect idea in a perfect world, and we know it's not perfect. But that's what I would like to see. I'd like to see the discussion about, but there's not even a discussion of any of that. So I'd like to see a discussion on, you know, this country has been losing jobs every Christmas for, like, I don't know, last 20, 30, 40 years. You hear how many layoffs you hear. Plus you hear some during the middle of the year. But you never hear those jobs coming back. So then there's just this permanent drain of the economy. We know the economy is stalled since 1979, but there's no discussion about that. They tell you if you work hard, you can make it, but most people are working harder than ever and not making it or barely making it. So there's all this rhetoric that's going on out there, and that's you know, if anybody was really paying attention, who was really running for office, who was really about America being great, as they all like to say they are. America being great doesn't mean that you can be a bully around the world. I can have a gun and you can't have a gun. That's not great. What's great is we have to share this planet on which we live. That's what's great, that we all are here. We can't get off of it. And if I do something over here, it affects you over there. That's what's great. Service is what's great. Not being number one. Whenever the president or whoever gets up there says, America has to be number one. Well, why? And if you're not number one, since you are claiming you're number one, what happened to number two and three and four? Did they suffer? Did they suddenly fall off the earth? Did they get abused more than somebody else? No. They're there. All countries are here on this earth living and doing their thing. But when you choose to be number one versus saying, let's share what we have, then now you're saying that you have some supreme right to being, you know, above somebody. That's just a false premise, and we need to stop buying into this we need to be number one concept, because we're not really number one in anything other than, well, we're number one in a lot of things that aren't very good. So
Ethan, come 2016, what is your decision?
I'm hoping that maybe I develop a platform that kind of interferes with the platform that we see now. And then by 2016, maybe we could shift this discussion into something more party and policy versus, people versus party. If that's not happening and I step into that booth to make a vote and I'm not really unhappy with everybody that I see, what I have heard someone suggest once, don't remember where I heard it, but if you're planning on not voting, I would suggest that you step into the booth, which is what I may do if this happens. I will register, and then I will leave without placing the vote unless I have some name that I want to write in. Because I think that just to not show up makes you uncounted. But to show up and to register a no vote, you're counted now. And I think that's a significant way to... imagine if half the voting populace just showed up and didn't, and just was like a no vote. I mean, what would that mean? What could that do? You know, so that I'm on that page as a maneuver, and to just also encourage people to stop looking at this party versus that party. We should be looking at policies and ideas that work for people and say, well, here's what we want. Here's an agenda that we think works that should be shared. I mean, you could ask simple questions like, do you think this is a good idea here or there or why? And let's have a real proper debate about situations. When a real debate's not being had, I'd like to see, you know, when they talk about, well, who's going to have the highest ratings in these polls to show up on a Fox debate? Well, screw Fox. I mean, why are they the only ones to help you for debate? If I decide I have a debate coming up and I'm inviting these candidates, and I'm like, well, here's the questions we're going to ask, and here's what's not being discussed. And if you want to put yourself ahead of the curve on these people and make yourself shine out, you need to show up at this debate over here, because here's where the rubber meets the road. And here's what we're going to be discussing. And here's the things that matter across the board. And here's what we want to hear, what your ideas and thoughts are. And so if we could make something like that happen, where we push these people who are running into a better, push them out of the general, you know, club that they're operating in, and force a critical mass of interest to say, hey, we want to see you over here. And then if we see you over here, we know you're really about doing something proper or doing something for this country, as opposed to just playing in that fake arena of the mainstream and answering and just playing that dumb game with these dumb questions and these dumb sports casting concepts. It's horrible. I don't know. I hope I answered your question.
Yes, you did. And I thank you so much for stretching out and really letting us understand what you're thinking. Thank you so much, Ethan, for your call today. Here's the interesting dilemma that we have. We're at the end of the program in terms of time, but we have a ton of people who have been very patient and are waiting to speak, and we should hear them, because this is to me really the wonderful work of radio, where we get to hear people and give them the space to fully express their thoughts. So we will come back to this tomorrow. We will come back to this tomorrow. And we will ask the indulgence of those who haven't been heard today to be on the dime tomorrow when we open up the lines and to get started very quickly so that we can hear as many voices as possible. And I assure you, you will have the space to express yourself, because this is the way in which we really share our thoughts and connect with each other. And you can see from the caliber of conversation that we're having, we have great people with great thoughts. I want to thank you so much, of course, for sharing them on this program. So we will continue the conversation tomorrow. You're not lost, those of you who haven't been heard today. I recognize there's a long line, but we will hear. If we have to take the rest of the week, we'll hear you out. That's the important thing. Thank you so much for joining me today. And I hope you stay tuned to this station. Coming up next is The Expanding Mind. You would want to stay tuned for that. Great programming. And I thank you, as always, for the pleasure and great privilege of your company. And we will return to the conversation tomorrow. Promise. Bye-bye.